Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Rabbi Reacts, where I get to talk about videos or topics that you've either directly messaged me or put in a comment in a previous chat. This week's topic is going to be continuing our free will discussion. We're going to be asking, is consciousness and free will an illusion? And this is coming from a someone who commented called Mara. Hi, Mara, who asked me in particular to look at a thing called the Great Free Will Debate on Big Think. I can't cover it all in one episode, so we're going to look at one or two thinkers in this episode, and hopefully I'll make another episode looking at some more. Before we get into it, please remember to like, to subscribe, and to click on the bell so that you can get updates and notifications whenever we produce a new video. So the Great Free Will Debate turns out to involve some quite famous figures, scientists in particular, who have different views on the question of whether we really have free will. The first one to get a real shot at it all is Daniel Dennett, quite a famous figure, one of the so-called four horsemen of atheists, philosopher, very much specialized in writing about consciousness and so on. He's going to say a few different things in the video, but we're going to start with a point he makes quite early on, where he really argues or says that consciousness in general, forget free will, consciousness is actually an illusion. Let's just take a quick clip because it's an important one, because sort of thing a lot of intelligent people say, but I'm going to explain why I think at least the way it's said, it doesn't really seem to work.
This sort of superficial access that we have to what's going on, that's what consciousness is. Now, when I say, who's this we who's got this access? That's itself part of the illusion, because there isn't a sort of boss part of the brain that's sitting there with this limited access. That itself is part of the illusion. What it is a bunch of different subsystems which have varying access to varying things and that conspire in a sort of competitive way to execute whatever projects it is that they're in their sort of mindless way executing.
Now, tracking Daniel Dennett's view exactly is not as simple as it sounds. Here he sounds like he's saying everything, including consciousness, is an illusion. Elsewhere, later on in the video, he'll actually say he doesn't like it when people don't talk about free will. And how you reconcile those two is quite an important piece, which maybe I'll talk about in a different video. But here he's certainly saying something about consciousness seems to be an illusion, right? Now, let's first of all deal with what can't be correct. To say consciousness itself is an illusion has to be nonsense, because who's being fooled? Surely it's the me. I mean, this goes back to Descartes, where he said, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. What he meant is, I'm directly aware of myself. This whole world could, in theory, be some kind of virtual reality hoax, and I'm, or you, are the only real mind in that world, or there's other minds, and your body's an illusion, and everything around's an illusion. But the thing being fooled is the bit we call me. That definitely exists. There's definitely a me who might be fooled or might not be fooled. So it's not that consciousness is an illusion. I am clearly conscious. What I think Dennett really does argue is that the sense that this me that's really in control, that boss thing he says, is the illusion. Now, let's even go along with what Dennett is arguing just for a brief moment. Dennett wants to say effectively that the conscious mind is kind of free riding on the brain processes. So the brain decides to think, should I eat this or should I not? And the mind feels, I should, no, I shouldn't, right? But it's really the brain just doing all the decisions, and the mind just thinks it's making the decisions. That type of argument. So on that point there's clearly a point, according to this view, in the brain that gets all these decisions and then shoots the output, right? And in the self, that's the bit that we call the self. That's clearly not an illusion either. There's clearly either some part of the mind or some part of the brain that is the boss, right? The bit of the mind that feels it gets the inputs and shoots them out would just correlate to a bit of the brain that gets the inputs and shoots them out. Let me make this clearer. The mind could have just been lots of popping up bits of unconnected consciousness, but that's not what we have. We have them integrated into one sense of self, one being I can call I, that holds the memory of all my past consciousness every time I've been awake, and hopes and aspirations for future, that it holds together as a single being who absorbs all the thoughts and feelings and makes those decisions. So if there really is only brain processes, there's something in the brain that holds everything together, and it's an integrated self that makes decisions, or at least, on some level, takes those inputs and decides. So what he must mean by the illusion, and what I think he means, is something which I think a lot of other thinkers, we're going to look at Steven Pinker in a moment, call the illusion, which is some sense of the self or mind being some wispy extra substance that kind of adds onto the brain. And I want to take us straight to Steven Pinker, right? A brilliant neuroscientist from Harvard, who pretty much makes exactly this point.
I don't believe there's such a thing as free will in the sense of a ghost in the machine, a spirit or soul that somehow reads the TV screen of the senses and pushes buttons and pulls levers of behavior. There's no sense that we can make of that.
So Steven Pinker put it extremely clearly, right? People who argue consciousness is an illusion will typically mean there isn't this extra element added to the brain, this wispy, ghostly, whatever it is, coming in from the outside, that is the Descartes himself and others thought when they talked about dualism. There's kind of the physical processes and a wispy, ghostly thing that comes in, a soul or something that makes decisions. Now, in Judaism, we do talk about a soul a lot. But I think it's really important to understand that I don't think classical Jewish texts, or at least certainly a huge number of them, do not mean any wispy, ghostly thing that enters anywhere. A classical point on this, perhaps the most famous philosopher of Kabbalah, was Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato, who writes lots of books on the philosophical model of the Kabbalah back in the 17th century. And he talks about the fact that every substance, everything in the world, comes from the same fundamental concealment and revelation of God, whether we call it soul or body or everything. It's just from different permutations of them. In fact, there's a fantastic source relatively recent, like about 100 or so years ago, known as the Leshem, one of the great, you know, Kabbalistic from the Lithuanian tradition writers, who points out much older sources that everything, when we speak about soul, everything in this world has soul, or what we mean by soul in Jewish terms. What I mean by everything, everything, this table, chair, everything. Why? Because soul is not some mysterious, wispy thing. Soul is the idea that everything is God's thoughts, thinking the whole thing into existence. And we talk about different levels of the soul, meaning different levels of revelation of God. So we talk about, for example, a table or inanimate object having a certain low level of soul called nefesh. What that means is that it might reveal God's will on a very limited level. But a biological organism reveals another level called the ruach, because when things from nature start to form together and produce a living entity that can reproduce and grow and repair and eat and so on, it expresses a much deeper level of God's revelation. So it expresses more soul. Then you get to the level of consciousness, animals that can kind of seem to exhibit some kind of consciousness. And we call that already a higher level, like a neshama, some kind of extra soul, which means the extra manifestation, or extra portal into a God's will view of a unified, integrated creation. Then we get to the human with exceptionally complex social behavior. We used language as a classical example, where millions of humans can interact and share wisdom and share thoughts together. And that we call a higher level, maybe chaya is the Hebrew word for it. And then you get to the ability to live God's will and vision, and that's an even higher level. All that's happening is at each level of organization, things are coming together and producing new properties. And those new properties are said to have more soul to them in as much as they express even more the will of God. So from that perspective, the body, the brain coming together to produce this conscious state that even in an animal is a certain level of revelation, to produce it with the power the human brain has in terms of consciousness, awareness of awareness, ability to think what's going on in your head and my head, ability to visualize a different future of humanity, ability to connect the idea there might be a creator of the universe and connect to that creator, ability to fundamentally override instincts, all the things we package in the terms of high consciousness, free will, soul, it doesn't mean anything about wispy substances entering into the head. And it's really fascinating, actually, as Pinker goes on, he kind of describes even a very low level of what we call free will and seems to say, yeah, you could call that free will, just you can't have this wispy extra substance, this ghostly thing. And here's the quote.
We also know that that brain is set up so that there are at least two kinds of behavior. There's what happens when I shine a light in your eye and your iris contracts, or I hit your knee with a hammer and your leg jerks upward. We also know that there's a part of the brain that does things like choose what to have for dinner, whether order chocolate or vanilla ice cream, how to move the next chess piece, whether to pick up the paper or put it down. That is very different from your iris closing when I shine a light in your eye. That's that second kind of behavior, one that engages vast amounts of the brain, particularly the frontal lobes, that incorporates an enormous amount of information in the causation of the behavior, that has some mental model of the world that can predict the consequences of possible behavior and select them on the basis of those consequences. All of those things carve out the realm of behavior that we call free will, which it is useful to distinguish from brute involuntary reflexes, but which doesn't necessarily have to involve some mysterious soul.
So again, this point can't be made too often enough. It seems to me, the more you listen to neuroscientists and others saying we don't have consciousness, we don't have free will, we don't have, so they mean we don't have soul by meaning some wispy extra substance that enters. And the minute we understand, from a Jewish perspective, at least to my understanding, that's not the claim being made. That's not what soul is or needs to be. Then I think we are free to understand that none of these arguments here are going to tell us that consciousness doesn't exist or free will doesn't exist. Now, you may be bothered by things like, well, then how can a soul be eternal, right? Or how can it last in an afterlife if it's completely connected to brain processes? So that's something I hope we'll cover in another video. I'm trying to keep these to bite-sized pieces to make single points and let you think about them and then move on to other points that are commented on. So I do want to get there. For now, just suffice it to say, or something to think about, is the fact that something in our world is completely tied to a network of brain processes, it doesn't mean God couldn't take it and hold it in some other arena. But I think that needs a bit more argument and something we'll try to make in another video. For now, for today, I hope you had a lot to think about. I hope your brain and conscious mind and soul are all enjoying all of this and that you're discovering that we're not a wispy little ghost, but the miracle of a biological world that can come together, integrate, and produce a portal into something so incredible as human consciousness, as the word we use for soul and godliness in this world. At least that's my thoughts. I hope they're provocative, hope they're fascinating, and hope to see you in the next episode. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for watching. If you enjoyed what you saw, please click on the like and subscribe and hit the notification button below. Thanks so much.